Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hello, discerning podcast listeners. This is Tom Kenny, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
This is Transformation Animation Podcast and Tooncast Beyond. This is a special crossover interview. I am TFG and Mike, and joining me is Pecan Court Michael. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. How are you, sir?
I'm hanging in there.
Yes, and we are about to talk to, well, the 90s version of Frank Welker to Mr. Tom Kenny. When we both looked at his IMDb, our jaws dropped. How are we going to ask this guy a bunch of questions? Because he's been in literally everything since 1990.
He's been in a lot of stuff. It's insane. And we're looking at this and just being overwhelmed.
Yes. It was very overwhelming. So yes, up next you will hear the incomparable Tom Kenny.
Greetings, former Decepticons. This is Starscream, and you're listening to Transformation Animation Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to a crossover interview between Transformation Animation Podcast and Tooncast Beyond. I am one of your hosts, TFG1 Mike. Joining me is Pecan Court Michael. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going, and joining us here on the Geekcast Radio Network is the one, the only, Tom Kenny. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hi, Mike and Michael. I'm the guy whose name is not a variant of Michael. How are you?
Very well. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah, it's so weird. I've told people, like, the last week, I've told people here and there, like, I'm talking to Tom Kenny on Thursday night. They're like, who? SpongeBob. Are you serious? You're talking to SpongeBob? What the?
Well, I think it's very telling that when you say a voice actor's real name, people go, who? But when you go, you know, Homer Simpson, people go, oh, yeah, I like Homer Simpson. I didn't know the other guy. And that is, for me, the beauty of voice acting. You know, you get to voice these characters that are, you know, iconic and famous and all that stuff without any of that drag down stuff that goes along with the whole fame thing.
Yes. Before we get started, can you give us the scoop on what's going on in the world of Tom Kenny? Any upcoming projects you care to reveal or pimp out?
Wow, what's going on in the world of Tom Kenny? I didn't realize that I was my own world.
Most voice actors are.
Let's see. I just got home from doing SpongeBob. The kids are just going to bed. SpongeBob continues to barrel along. Let's see. What else is coming out that people might not know about? I'm Dr. Octopus in the upcoming Ultimate Spider-Man animated series. I'm Zelias Zox, who's a bad guy in the upcoming Green Lantern animated series from Bruce Timm. Probably doing more Winnie the Pooh stuff. I do Rabbit for Winnie the Pooh that just began this year for Disney. And continue to be the Ice King on Adventure Time for Cartoon Network.
Awesome.
And then there's some other stuff that I'm probably not thinking of, but when it hits me, I'll suddenly yell out and interrupt whatever question you're asking. Oh, yeah, I forgot. I'm also this guy.
Wow, that's awesome.
There's all that stuff that you're not allowed to say. It's a non-disclosure.
Yes, which I'm not good at not saying stuff. I'm really good at saying stuff, but not so good at not saying stuff.
Yeah, we got into trouble with Maurice LaMarche. He revealed that he was going to be Mr. Freeze in Arkham City, and apparently he wasn't supposed to say that right then and there at the time.
Well, you know, it's funny. Like, I guess, you know, I always ask the companies because, you know, they get weird. You know, you weren't supposed to say that until such and such a date.
Yeah.
But, you know, the bottom line is, who cares? You know, it's like, it's not like the game is going to sell any. Maurice LaMarche is Mr. Freeze. That's it. I'm finished with this game.
Well, no, it's not even that. It's the fact that, we asked him a question, he gave us an interesting answer, and he mentioned Mr. Freeze. I asked him a follow-up question, can you give us a sample of the voice? And that's when he said, I don't think I'm allowed to do that. As soon as we released the interview, the internet was a buzz because of our. It's like we broke the story that, oh my God, Mr. Freeze is in the second Batman Arkham Asylum game.
Wow, that's see now I'm frantically going back and going, yeah, I think all the stuff I mentioned is already in the pipeline, so I think I'm okay. Like for a while, the Spider-Man thing was under wraps, and now I think it's okay to talk about that.
Awesome.
It usually depends on if there's been a major Comic-Con recently and how long ago it was, because that's when they announce that stuff.
Right.
Yep. Very cool.
So to get things started, can you tell us where you're from and how you got started in voice acting?
I'm not allowed to talk about any of that. No, I'm kidding. I am from Syracuse, New York, right in the smack dab in the center of New York State. Many many hours from show business or Manhattan or anything resembling a career in entertainment, and. That's where I'm from. What was the other one? How I got started?
Yeah.
Right. So how do you get from Nowhereville to SpongeBob?
Yeah, my career path has been, kind of elliptical and strange. I started out doing stand-up comedy and playing in rock and roll bands and things like that in Syracuse and doing sketch comedy with my lifelong childhood friend Bobcat Goldplate, who I met when we were 6 years old, and we were in grammar school together from first grade on, high school together, and kind of had this shared interest in comedy, stand-up comedy, and sketch comedy, and all that. And being in high school in the mid to late 70s, and right when SNL and SCTV and all that stuff was just getting going, and we were very excited by that, and that was a game changer for both of us. We decided that was what we wanted to do. And I also had this added weird layer of being obsessed with voice acting in cartoons and Mel Blanc and Stan Freberg and June Foray and Paul Frees, and not the Mr. Frees that Maurice LaMarche wasn't supposed to talk about, but Paul Frees. And it all kind of coalesced. I wound up moving to Boston, Massachusetts, and doing stand-up, and then San Francisco I made a living as a stand-up comedian for many years, tried to break into the whole voiceover world, and then finally in the early 90s did a show called Rocco's Modern Life that was a Nickelodeon show, and an early Nicktoon just after Ren and Stimpy, and wound up really loving that and wanting to do more of that, and kind of straddled the world of voiceover and on-camera stuff. I did a few seasons of an HBO comedy series called Mr. Show with Bob and David that had Dave Cross and Bob Odenkirk in it. And just before that, a show called The Edge that was a short-lived sketch show on Fox that had Jennifer Aniston and before she, when she was still doing Leprechaun 2 and Wayne Knight and the woman that later became my wife, Jill Talley. And, around that time, voiceover was starting to be a little bit of my work life. And I wanted to do whatever I had to do to make that the lion's share of my work life, just because, well, two reasons, really. I enjoyed it more and thought that I was better at that than I was at on-camera stuff. Right. And despite having a fair amount of work on camera, I just thought the voiceover stuff was a better use of my skill set or whatever. I just felt more comfortable at it. Yeah. And during the third season of Mr. Show, SpongeBob became a pilot and then got greenlit as a series, and all this other stuff was kind of going on at the same time. Different cartoon series from different places, Powerpuff Girls and Cat Dog, and a lot of different stuff. So, it's kind of like being a session musician. You just kind of show up with your drumsticks and do whatever they tell you to do.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, voice acting is, you know, it's the best job in the world. You can go in there in your pajamas and just use your voice. You don't even have to dress up.
It is. I, you know, in the spirit of full disclosure, I have to say that I have never worn my pajamas to work, but I guess theoretically, one could wear their pajamas if I wanted to wear my night before Christmas sleep cap and carry a candle on a little plate into work. I think I could.
I mentioned the exact same thing in another interview with Jason Marsden, and the very next day he went into the new Thundercats series. He went into that voice cast and took a picture. It was him in a t-shirt and pajama pants, just because I mentioned it in an interview.
Oh my God, that is so funny. That is so funny. Well, that's what people they go, wow, you know, you can wear your pajamas, you know, you don't have to shave, you know. Translation, you can look as shitty as you want and still work.
So
But
I'm all
yeah, just as a point of pride, I try to be the best dressed voiceover guy out there.
Nice.
Awesome.
I actually try to be kind of styling.
Out of all the characters you have played over the years, what are some of your favorites?
Well, Starscream was on a show called Transformers Animated. I don't know if you guys have heard of that one or whatever, but kidding. And you know, it's always fun to play bad guys. SpongeBob, of course, is right up there with me. The first character that I got to play was a character called Heifer on a show called Rocko's Modern Life, and like we talked about before, an early Nickelodeon tune, and he was really fun and funny, kind of the Bullwinkle, you know, the dumb Bullwinkle kind of sidekick to the main character
Right.
of Rocko. And you know, they're all fun in their own way. I have to say, when I think about stuff that I've done on camera, so much of it was like just kind of like boring or unpleasant or uncomfortable or a drag. And with voiceover, I'd be hard pressed to think of a gig that wasn't at least a little bit of fun. You know what I mean? Like the worst day you have doing voiceover, I always say is still better than the best day you ever had doing some day job that you hate.
Yeah.
I can
So, you know, when
imagine.
people start complaining about voiceover, I'm like, dude, shut up. They're you know, you're making funny voices and they're giving you money. You know, stop complaining.
That's right.
Well, unless you're in a
And the
Bowling Burger
union
session.
says that the sessions can only be 4 hours long, so shut the F up, okay?
Can't be that bad.
Yeah, exactly. How bad could it be?
That's
You're
right.
hanging out with funny, weird, creative people making funny voices and having a good time.
So you mentioned Transformers Animated, you know, and we love us some Transformers Animated.
Yeah, I do too. I enjoyed that show.
Let's talk about that a little bit if we could.
Yeah, we
Sure,
are
what did that
actually
go? Three
good.
seasons?
Three seasons, yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. So I'm not completely senile yet. It's funny, like
No.
sometimes people look at my resume and just go, "Wow." You know, it's like we printed out your resume and killed 25 trees. You know,
I know.
you've done a lot of
Yeah,
stuff, and I'm
we
like,
looked at it.
"Well,
It was like we looked at it and was like, our jaws just dropped. Like, how are we going to come up with questions for him that fit 30 minutes? Wow, because like,
Especially with his tendency to give run-on sentences, you know, that just go on and on to every question. Transformers was really fun because although I'm a little bit old to be like a first generation Transformers kid, you know what I mean? Like I was born in '62, so Transformers was a little late for me. You know, I have a younger brother that's 10 years younger than me. That was kind of more that wave,
Right, yeah.
time wise. But you know, it was fun. You know, it was one of those things. I mean, pretty much every series that you go in for, no matter how many shows you're working on, you still have to audition, and you go in there and they say, "We want you to read for this guy and this guy and this guy." And for me, that was Starscream. And I said, you know, do you want it to sound like any of the previous Starscreams? I know there have been a lot of other Transformers series. Should I woodshed with this stuff and, you know, try to voice match this stuff? And they said, no. No, don't worry about that. Just, you know, just your
do
take
your
on
own
the character.
Thing.
Yeah, your take on the character. Okay, which was kind of freeing for me because I suck at impressions. and much to my surprise, I wound up getting Starscream. And on any show like that, they wind up kind of just on the fly, like auditioning you for a bunch of other stuff as it's going on. So, you know, hey, Jeff Bennett, could you take a shot at this guy? Okay, now Tom, could you take a shot at this guy? Now Bumper Robinson, could you take a shot at this guy? Okay, we like Jeff's, or we like Tom's, or yeah, we think Bumper's the best for that guy. So, you know, I wound up playing Starscream and also Sumdac and Scrapper and Skywarp. A lot of stuff
on
that.
Yeah, you played all the clones except for the female clone.
Yes, it was really fun. And my favorite character, on that show was Sumdac. I just love the idea of this guy that just found Megatron's head laying around and
used his hand for a chair.
Yes, exactly. Used his head for a chair and kind of reverse engineered it so that he became kind of a captain of industry. Speaking of Steve Jobs and those guys, and I always thought that made him a really interesting character, was that this empire of his was founded on this secret that he was a little ashamed of and didn't want anyone to find out about. You know, it's like as if Einstein had, you know, somebody whispering in his ear that wasn't Einstein. You know what I mean? Like, that made him a very interesting character to me.
Were there any other characters besides Starscream and Sumdac that you maybe read for that you wanted to get other than those two?
Wow, that's a good question. And keep in mind that this series was a few years ago. I remember...
Like, what would a Tom Kenny version of Optimus Prime from that show be?
You know, I knew that I didn't... I knew that I probably wasn't right for those. But you know what? I do remember wanting to be the cop. Was it Fanzone?
Yeah, Fanzone, yeah.
Yeah, Fanzone. I remember wanting to be that guy just because I always wanted to be a cop. You know what I mean? I loved or play a cop, I should say, not be a cop. I love Dragnet and Adam 12 and all those goofy old cop shows. And I just thought it would be really fun to play the put upon, policeman. But, another one of the great things about voiceover is that when, you know, you're playing with guys like Billy West and Jeff Bennett and Corey Burton and, you know, guys like that. It's, you know, Maurice LaMarche. You know, it's the bar is so high that when you lose out to one of those guys, you don't feel that bad.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, okay, so, what can I say? Babe Ruth beat me in a game of baseball. You know, boo hoo.
Darn. Hey, we love to hear background, funny stories about voice actors just being goofy behind the mic. What can you tell us about the time you met Weird Al Yankovic on the show?
Oh, great. Yeah, Weird Al. He was on the show. Yeah. I remember that. He played Rekgar. Yeah. I've known Weird Al for years. He's a friend of mine, and I always love working with him. He's one of the sweetest, nicest guys in show business. So and that's across the board, right? Like nobody's got a bad story about Weird Al. It's kind of disappointing. So anytime you get to work with Weird Al, he was a Mr. Show fan, and my wife had done his live action Saturday morning series. And I'm actually on his latest album. he has a song called TMZ, and I am the irritating TMZ announcer guy that's kind of heard throughout the guitar break on that song.
Awesome.
Yeah, so he's great. I mean, one thing I remember from Weird Al being on that show is that at the time we recorded that episode, my son, who is now almost 14, was in the midst of an intense Weird Al fan phase. Uh-huh. And him and his friends were all super, super into Weird Al because of Stuck in the Drive-Thru and, like, you know, all those things that were whatever that last album was before this current one.
Right.
And they thought he was a new guy. Like, they went, oh, Dad, there's this really funny song by this guy, Weird Al Yankovic. You've got to hear it. The video is really funny. And I said, yeah, that's Weird Al. I know Weird Al. You know Weird Al? Yeah. I've known him for a long time. He's really sweet.
So that's story is. No, I'm sorry to interrupt you. No, I've heard the story over the years that when Weird Al came in, it was you that kind of freaked out about it, but it wasn't you. It was your son that freaked out.
No. Well, exactly. So what happened was my kid and all his friends are crazy for Weird Al. Now, at this point, I haven't yet told them that I know Weird Al. I'm keeping it under my hat. But yeah. I know that Weird Al is going to come in and do an episode of Transformers. I still haven't told them that I know him. That comes later. So I said, hey, you guys want to go to a Transformers recording session with me? And they're like, yeah, sure, you know, okay. And all the way there, they were talking about Weird Al and have you heard this song and blah, blah, blah. And I said, can you guys imagine meeting Weird Al? And they said, oh, my God, I don't know what I would say. I would be so freaked out. He's so genius and blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, you know. And then knowing full well that we walked into this recording studio, Weird Al is going to be there.
Yeah.
So I brought my son and a couple of his friends, and when they walked in, and I just introduced them around the room, you know, here's, you know, this is Sue Blue, she's the voice director, and this is David Kay, you know, he plays Optimus Prime, and, you know, all these, you know, actors and engineers and mm-hmm. animators, and, oh, and that's, this is Weird Al, you know, he's sitting in the back on the couch, and they're jaws just hit. They couldn't speak. They started hyperventilating. They freaked out. It was one of those perfect storms because they had no idea that I knew Weird Al because I was keeping it secret. And they also, he was the last guy that they were expecting to see. So, and they talked about him the whole ride to Cartoon Network, like just organically. They were talking about this and that and Weird Al. And they, you know, so they wigged out. They wigged out. It was really fun. And Alice, so, you know, him and I just did, we did some stuff on the Batman Brave and Bold series on Cartoon Network recently.
Right.
And, you know, I got a chance to see him again at the rap party for that. And he's just, you know, there's nobody like him. He's just a really, really nice and super talented guy. Like, deserves everything, works his butt off. Super talented, and you know, what can you say?
Awesome. Huh. So shortly after Animated went off the air, you got involved with the Transformers live action movies, starting with Revenge of the Fallen, playing Wheelie and Skids.
That was one of those things where I went in on an audition at at Bay Films in Santa Monica. You know, the auditions happened right there, and I said, you know, will it help me? Should I tell them that I was on the Transformers animated series? Like, maybe that would help. Like, if they know I'm already part of Transformers world. And my agent said, no, don't. It doesn't. No, don't even go there. Just go in and audition as a completely new person, you know? And I don't know what their thinking was on that, but, so I went in and just, you know, the usual thing, just looked at a picture of the character, read some stuff, and you know, as always, was rather surprised when they called me back to do some more, and was even more surprised when they walked me. You know, usually when you audition for stuff, you know, you're not meeting the main guy. You know what I mean? Like, there's the layers and layers of underlings and lackeys that you're dealing with before you ever get the gig. But when I went back for the callback, wow, Michael Bay is actually running the callback. That's him. Wow. There's like two people here, and one of them is Michael Bay. That's amazing. And he's very hands-on guy. And, you know, that was kind of unusual and kind of speaks to his, you know, working method of just being very, very involved of every aspect of it straight down the line.
It's micromanaging. Did he actually tell you how to play that one? Did he tell you how to play that one? Or did, I mean, like, again, micromanaging.
Or was that something you came up with? I mean, he's very, you know, he's waiting to hear, you know, so much of voice acting is just running through a whole bunch of variations until you finally hit on the thing that the guy in charge is hearing in his head. And when he hears it, he goes, yes, yes, that. And then he directs you further. So, you know, this may come as a surprise to you, but Michael Bay was very, very opinionated and knew exactly what he wanted.
I can imagine.
Gee, go figure, right? Yeah.
So there was a lot of controversy.
No, he was great.
Yeah, there was a lot of controversy over the urban qualities that were attributed to Skids and the Autobot brothers. But
I guess when you say urban, that's a euphemism for black, right?
Black hillbilly people who can't read in general. I don't want to point any fingers, but you know, when you're reading for this, were you like, what? I mean, what did you think of this while you were doing
reading for Skids?
Yeah, for Skids. That's,
you know, he said that actually happened in the sessions where he said, hey, you know, you want to do some, you know, it was actually like almost like a scratch thing. You know, where myself and the other actor, Reno Wilson, who's an African-American, I'm a hillbilly, he's an African-American, and, you know, he said these are robots that have been, you know, obsessed with, you know, that they're picking up these signals from, you know, pop culture, and their particular obsession is gangster rap, like Bad Boys 2. That's their thing.
Yeah.
And said, okay, cool. Yeah, we can do that. And that was it. And, at first I thought it was just kind of a placeholder until they found the real guy that was going to be doing that. And then it turned out that, me and Reno were really, really doing it. So we did it. And, you know, three people got upset for 5 minutes. And then Michael Jackson died and it all went away.
That's true.
Like, I remember when it, you know, I was shocked that people were so that it was controversial at all. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is the most egregious thing happening today. You've got to be kidding me. And I was like, wow. And Reno, I remember you know, talking to Reno, and he was going, what? You know, he couldn't believe it either, because his thought was that hip-hop culture long ago transcended color lines. And, you know, if you go into an Asian neighborhood, there's Asian wannabe gangsters, you know, and if you go into a white neighborhood, there's white wannabe gangsters in Beverly Hills. And, these guys were very much wannabe gangsters. They weren't real Crips and Bloods. They're gigantic robots that have been watching Bad Boys 2 one too many times. And to me, that was a valid place to go, you know. And okay, you know, it's when you're a voiceover actor, you're pretty much a tool in the box of the guy in charge, whether that guy is Steven Hillenburg or Michael Bay or Craig McCracken or Genndy Tartakovsky or whoever it is. Yeah. You know, you're a color in a colored pencil in their box, and you're just going, okay, whatever you guys want, that's what I'm. You know, that's my job is to facilitate what you guys are hearing. So, you know, and literally, you know, the next day, you know, Michael Jackson passed away, and I think that was kind of made this other showbiz story about the gangsta wannabe robots seem like the puny and unimportant thing that truly was all along.
Yeah. All right. A buddy of mine, Paul, who is a huge fan of Transformers in general, he basically told me that I have to ask you this question.
Sure.
Skids was written out of the third film. Before that happened, did you record any lines for Dark of the Moon, the third film?
As Skids?
Yes.
Was Skids the guy that I was?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I don't know. I think maybe there was like a couple of things where they were like in a crowd scene or something. But again, this stuff, like, you know, you just kind of, it's kind of one stop on a day where you're going to like six different places and doing crazy voices. But yeah, I think there was probably, you know, there wasn't any, I get, you know, if the question is, are there any big skids scenes on the cutting room floor? No.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing was, is Michael Bay had promised that Skids and Mudflap would not appear in the movie, although there, you know, there's photographs of them on the set. And so people were like, oh, maybe there was something going, some shenanigans, you know, maybe they were in the movie and they were cut. You know, it would be interesting to hear from the voice actor.
You know, it's funny, but by the time the robot voices come into the movie, like, you know, all that stuff is such a done deal. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
The movie's been shot. You know, everything is practically done. There's no lip flap on the robot, so you're free to play around to a certain degree. But, you know, yeah, the dumb voice actor is certainly not privy to any of those. backroom, you know, decisions that responsible adults are making. We're too busy dicking around and having fun.
Well, let's talk about Wheelie. I mean, Wheelie's a fun character. Tell us how you came into his voice.
Well, again, Wheelie, in that session at Bay Films with Michael, Michael just said, you know, this guy's kind of like a Joe Pesci kind of guy. And, okay. I think I can do something akin to, you know, Joe Pesci as a robot, so we did, you know, like, so much of the stuff, whether it's Powerpuff Girls or Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends or whatever, is a creator going, this is what I want you to sound like, and then you do it, and they go, great, cool, you got the gig. You know, and sometimes that's, that's kids, too, so, you know, it's whatever you do.
It's a bit up in the air, but did Wheelie and Brains really die in the movie?
They did go
down.
Boy,
I guess only the editor, only the editor knows for sure. Yeah, that was one of those things that I walked out of the screening going, am I dead? You know, I don't know. I guess if I get a call in a couple of years, I'll find out. Like, so much of this stuff is out of your hands that you just, you know, just do it, and then you go, wow, Michael laughed, okay, I guess he liked that one, and then you then you know, you get into your Prius and he gets into his Maserati, and you both drive home.
Nice. Well, so suffice to say, Wheelie won't be coming back in Transformers 4.
You know, I don't know. You know, I'm cool with it. Yeah, I'll totally stand behind anything that I've ever done, you know, but probably in the interest of just not creating a shitstorm, they should, yeah, why bother? Why bother?
Well, you could do Zombie Wheelie. That would be cool too.
Yeah, there you go.
Would you be up for more Transformers roles if they came along?
Oh, God. The word no is not in my vocabulary. Yeah,
So wait a second. You're going to be the next season My Little Pony villain?
You know what? Anytime. Anytime, absolutely. Of course, you know, I would love that. I think they use mostly Canadian actors. But, you know, a lot of that My Little Pony show was, you know, formed by Lauren Faust, who did a lot of stuff on Powerpuff and did a lot of stuff on Foster's Home for American Friends Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. So as the parent of a kid who likes My Little Pony, I'd be all over that. It sounds fun to me.
Nice. We just talked to David Kay not too long ago, and he had said that he was up for a role in Transformers Prime. And this is, you know, another guy who has been in Transformers and has worked with Frank Welker.
He's been a part of the Transformers world for a long time, yeah.
Yeah, so the question becomes, is that something that you might have in the cards for yourself?
Well, I haven't heard anything. Again, you know, I love doing, you know, all kinds of shows. One of the things that I really enjoy about my job is that, you know, one day you're doing, you know, My Little Pony type stuff, and then the next day you're doing something really educational, and then the next day you're doing some really straight, you know, network promos. It's the most anticipated new show of the season, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then you go and do SpongeBob, and then you go and do, you know, some theme park ride, and then, you know, it's always different. So, you know, for somebody like me that gets bored really fast, it's the perfect gig. But sure, I love Transformers world, and you know, and you know, the SpongeBob connection is that Bill Fagerbakke, that does Patrick Starr on SpongeBob, was Bulkhead on the Transformers animated show.
Right.
But yeah, I love it. Was a great, you know, anytime they want me to do Transformers, I'm there. It was a great cast. Corey Burton is the voice actor's voice actor. You know,
that's an interview we would love to get.
Yeah, he's Corey's mysterious. You know, he's a mysterious genius. You know, he's great. I love working with him.
He goes back all the way to the G1 Transformers.
He does, yeah, and he was, I believe, Ratchet.
Shockwave.
He was Ratchet and Megatron in the Transformers animated show that I was on. One of the fun things, you know, about the voice acting world is that there's a fairly finite number of people that do it all the time. So you get to know people really well. So when you walk into a show like Transformers Animated and you're working with Tara Strong, who played Sari, and Jeff Bennett, Corey Burton, you know, Fagerbakke, Bumper Robinson, and you know, it's like old home week, and you know, people like Matt Youngberg, who I had worked with on the Batman, because I was the Penguin on Batman, and I did a lot of stuff on Teen Titans, and Derek Wyatt was did a lot of the designs for that show, and he had done stuff on, I believe, Teen Titans, as well as Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. And it's a very comfortable world, you know. If you got what it takes to stick around it for a little while, you'll work with the same nice people over and over again. And I actually count everybody that I've met on that I worked with on that show as a friend, you know.
Yeah,
nice. Awesome. Well, you're best known for your role as SpongeBob SquarePants.
Mm-hmm.
So we I'd like to talk to you about that a little bit.
Sure.
I'm getting all fanboyish all of a sudden. Like,
oh, cool.
Michael,
cool.
I'm like, oh my god. Background. Michael is married. He's got two boys. And before we started this interview, Michael was putting his boys to bed, and they were using SpongeBob SquarePants toothpaste.
Oh, great. It's like, wow, sponge flavor. Now with extra sponginess. It's like, wait, isn't SpongeBob full of holes? I don't think you want to be using toothpaste. It's the toothpaste that actually causes cavities.
Wow. So how did you get involved with SpongeBob? Was it because of Rocko's Modern Life, or how did that come about for you?
Yes. Steven Hillenburg was the creative director on Rocko's Modern Life, my first job in animation, his first job in animation, and really a whole lot of people's first job in animation. It was one of those petri dish shows that you know, everybody that worked on that show wound up kind of going on to other things and kind of having a fairly long, a lifespan in animation. And, guys that I work with every day on a number of different shows are all guys that started out with on Rocko.
Awesome. So where did the voice for SpongeBob come from? Did it take you a while to get it down?
No, like, like all these guys that we're talking about, whether it's Pendleton Ward, the creator of Adventure Time, or Michael Bay, or any of these guys, Steve had a very clear idea of what he wanted SpongeBob to sound like. And once I dialed it in, he was like, yes, that's it. Don't try anything else. That's it. That's it. That's what I'm hearing. Perfect. That's the guy. And we've got it. And, when it came time to do the pilot, and then for the pilot to become a series, he went to bat for me, you know, with the brass at Nickelodeon and said, this is the guy. I don't need to hear anybody else. Don't audition any other actors. I don't need to hear people that are on sitcoms or whatever, or movie stars. You know, this guy laughs like SpongeBob, cries like SpongeBob, sings like SpongeBob, ad-libs like SpongeBob. You know, we're done with SpongeBob. Now we need to cast these other characters, you know, that SpongeBob hangs out with. And you know, I appreciated that very much.
Nice.
Awesome.
Now, SpongeBob says some off-the-wall things. So have you ever been surprised by a line in the script?
You know, pretty much every week, you know, it's like there's something when you're reading the storyboard that is so random and so, you know, so bizarre that you go, oh, okay, that's weird. I like it. You know, weird is good.
Let's see. Are you surprised at as far as how popular SpongeBob has gotten? I mean, it's like a worldwide phenomenon now.
Yes, I guess the short answer to that is that I was, first of all, I'm surprised that it got so popular. And second of all, I'm surprised that it's stayed so popular. You know, I don't know why or what the science of that is, if any, but it's a very unusual phenomenon where, you know, something stays on the air for so long, and SpongeBob, you know, oddly, but thankfully, is getting higher ratings. You know, just keeps getting higher and higher ratings. Like, it's doing better now than it ever has in terms of numbers. So it's pretty crazy. And I just did an episode of Futurama last week, and David X. Cohen, you know, one of the main dudes on Futurama, told me that, you know, I started doing guest stuff on Futurama in 1999, which was the year SpongeBob went to series. And he said, you realize that only three shows that were around in 1999 are still on the air, and it's Family Guy, Futurama, and SpongeBob.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, okay, cool. I work for all three of them. I work for all three of those guys. That's good. Okay, cool. So, you know, because I do stuff for the Cleveland show sometimes. So, yeah, it's surprising to all involved, I would say. Huh. And very gratifying. You know,
awesome.
I was traveling around Europe this summer with my kids, and it's, you know, it's weird to be in some, you know, mountain village in Italy, and the waitress that's waiting on you has a SpongeBob shirt on. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, every voice actor that we've ever talked to has that story of, oh, I was in a toy store here, and I did the voice here, and they're like, Mommy, that's not SpongeBob, or that, you know, it's like.
Oh yeah, well, I keep it very much like if I'm ever any place and a kid has a SpongeBob shirt or a SpongeBob toy or whatever, there's no way I'm gonna go up to that person and risk looking like the creepy, the creepy freak that's trying to talk to your child. Do you like cartoons, Timmy? You know, so like Airplane. Do you like Gladiator movies, Billy? So you know, it's you know, so it's kind of a quiet source of pride for me.
Yes. Yes. What types of characters do you like playing better? Good guys, bad guys, serious characters, funny characters? Like, what is like your favorite thing to do for voice acting as far as character wise?
You know, they're all fun. Like I said earlier, like, you know, there's very little of it feels like work. There's only, you know, I can count the sessions that I've done in, you know, 20 years on one hand where it actually felt kind of laborious, where you're going, Jesus, you know. And a lot of times that's commercials, you know, where you go, man, I've said part of this good breakfast every way that I know how to say it, you know. We've done 999 takes of me saying part of this good breakfast. I feel like I'm hitting a wall here, and you know, I'm really trying, and I can't I don't know what they want, you know. But you know, advertising is a little different. But they're all fun, you know. It's fun doing, you know, it's really fun doing the preschool stuff like Handy Manny for Disney or Rabbit for Winnie the Pooh. And it's, you know, good guys are fun, bad guys are funner. You know, it's really fun just letting your evil flag fly and being the bad guy. You know, I've done you know, Penguin for the Batman and you know, Zelias Zox currently in for Green Lantern, Doc Ock for Ultimate Spider-Man, like we said earlier, and they're really, it's really fun to just let that hang out, you know, like just go for it and be evil. You know, even in I consider the Ice King in Adventure Time to be every bit as weird and creepy of a villain as Dr. Octopus. You know, he's a weird guy that kidnaps princesses and, you know, tries to be friends with them. So, it's a very, it's kind of cathartic. You know, you just, you know, I guess any actor that you talk to, you know, will talk about the, you know, the liberating fun of just being a full-on bad guy. And I first felt that way back in 1992 when I did the bad guy in Bobcat's film Shakes the Clown. You know?
Awesome. So, yeah, there were a couple times in animated where Starscream actually screamed, and I'm like, wow, dude, I wonder if Tom lost his voice that day.
Yeah, well, you know, usually not. I mean, you know, I guess there have been a couple of times where you've got multiple sessions going on and they're all screamers. But mm-hmm. generally, you know, if you pace yourself, you can, you know, most of these, you know, adventure cartoons and you know, are pretty extreme. You know, there's very high highs and very low lows, and a lot of the comedy is like that too. SpongeBob, you know, is very high highs and very low lows. So, you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say that sometimes it's kind of nice, you know, kind of a relief to do these one of these preschool shows where there's no conflict and everybody's really gentle and they, you know, nobody ever fights and you're just like, wow, you know, yeah. Blue's Clues.
You don't have a lot of screaming with Rabbit, right?
Well, you know, I guess of everyone in Pooh, he's probably the most likely to scream because he's such a fuss budget. You know what I mean? He likes his garden a certain way and his kitchen a certain way, and he doesn't like people dropping in unannounced. So if anybody's going to scream in the 100-acre wood, it's him. But it's not the same kind of primal scream as Starscream.
Right. See, that would be a funny episode. Rabbit loses it and just
yeah. Absolutely
just screaming at people.
Well, you know, and he does sometimes, like in this feature film that was out this summer. You know, there are a couple of scenes where Rabbit gets pretty extreme.
Let's change gears a little bit and talk about one of my favorite subjects, toys. Do you collect
sure.
the toys from the characters that you voice?
I collect. You know, I guess I definitely have the collector mentality, but not toys, and definitely not toys that I do the voice of. That's the last thing I want in my house is stuff that sounds like me. So yeah, I don't have anything. You know, the stuff I collect records, I collect rock and roll 45s and 78s and blues and hillbilly music and, you know, crazy stuff like that, and comic strip original art from, you know, 1920s and 1930s comic strips. But, you know, in terms of stuff that has a chip in it with my voice, no.
Not so much. I was going to say, my boy loves Superhero Squad. And we have so many
great
Iron Mans.
Oh, that's cool. Is there talking stuff with Iron Man?
You know, well, they don't so much talk. It's they do have the helicarrier, and when you push the button, it sings the theme song, which is awesome.
Superhero Squad, da da da.
Yeah,
we hear that day in, and it gives me nightmares. It really is.
Oh, that's great. Well, yeah, Superhero Squad was another one that was really fun because, you know, as you know, a kid that grew up on comic books and superheroes and all that Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, you know, 60s and 70s stuff, you know, I was starting to feel like superheroes had been taken away from kids who really like superhero stuff and given to kind of, you know, 35-year-old mouth breathers who eat Cheetos while they type online. And it was, you know what I mean? It was kind of like, well, I remember when comic books were actually for kids, where a kid could read a comic book and a college student could also read a comic book and it could be the same comic book. And there was something in there for both of them. And, you know, it was starting to feel so in the post Dark Knight, the post Frank Miller world, it was starting to feel so freaking nihilistic that I, you know, and I was just so bored with nihilism it was kind of a great treat when they said, hey, we're going to do a superhero sitcom that, you know, it's like Fisher Price versions of the Marvel superheroes.
Yeah.
You know, not literally Fisher Price, but you know what I mean? Little super fetuses that are you know, kind of got a big head and big feet and they're kind of squatty, like those Star Wars
little
ones.
Little big head man, yep.
Yeah. Like those Star Wars ones that Hasbro puts out, you know.
And I
was like, okay, great. And it was kind of fun because I knew a lot of people with kids that liked superheroes, but they couldn't go see the latest Batman movie because a pencil gets shoved into a guy's eye socket. So it was kind of fun to have, you know, to be a part of this thing that kind of, you know, like I think all these characters, you know, whether it's Transformers or you know, DC superheroes or Marvel superheroes or whatever, you know, are strong enough characters that you can do different versions of them designed for different demographics. You know what I mean? Like, you can do a kid-friendly Iron Man, and you can do a staring in the mirror while he tries to fight off his alcoholism Iron Man. And they're both valid, but, you know, you probably don't want your four-year-old watching going to the AA. It's Tony Stark goes to the AA meeting is probably not suitable for your five-year-old boy who loves superheroes. Yeah. So it was a really fun show, and you know, it's always fun to play the handsome good guy when you're a pot-bellied, you know, late 40s dad. And it was kind of fun, and you also got to be, you know, the guys on the other side of the spectrum too. That you got to be the evil dudes too, because I got to be MODOK and Juggernaut and a whole bunch of other people on that show. So you were able to be, it was great. You were able to be the evil guys and the heroic guys in the same script.
Yeah.
So it was kind of scratching both itches.
We love that show. Tremble before the might of MODOK. You know, it's just,
yeah, I love it. That was a really fun show, and you know, hopefully we'll get the opportunity to revisit those characters again in some form somewhere.
Yes. Before we let you go, can you remind everybody what you have coming up?
Sure, and this is a lot of this is stuff that I've not seen yet. But somebody just emailed me from the Bruce Timm Green Lantern show and said that it's looking real good. I play a guy called Zelias Zox, who's a bad guy, Doc Ock in the upcoming Ultimate Spider-Man, and the Ice King in Adventure Time. And by the way, we will the Adventure Time crew and cast will be at the New York Comic-Con in mid-October in New York City, so awesome. Hope to see a lot of you guys there. And, continuing on doing some Rabbit Winnie the Pooh stuff for Disney.
And, of course, SpongeBob is something that's never-ending.
And SpongeBob looks like it's got some legs. you know, hopefully, I never take anything for granted, but it looks like SpongeBob is going to be around for a bit. It's still doing real well, and you know, I just wrote a song that's going to be in the 2012 Christmas, you know, holiday special for SpongeBob, called "Don't Be a Jerk." It's Christmas, so it's keeps on being fun.
We would like to thank Mr. Kenny for taking the time to chat with us in this special Transformation Animation Podcast Tooncast Beyond crossover interview. We'll ask you to hold the line, and we'll be back after this.
Thank you, Michael and Mike.
Thank you.
Ah, never before have I seen a more impressive group of lethal fighting machines. And pretty good looking, if I do say so myself. That pompous bag of bolts Megatron won't know what hit him. He'll be crushed in our wake. Us against Megatron? Are you insane? Huh? I think I just sprang an oil leak. Silence, you fool! Megatron is a worthless pile of scrap metal compared to my genius. Brilliant observation, brilliant. But your genius pales in comparison to the genius of our leader, the original Starscream. Oh, I could listen to this one all day. What are you talking about? I am the original Starscream. Liar. I am the original Starscream. I never said I was the original Starscream. You just did right now. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. No, I didn't.
Oh, haven't you figured it out yet? He's a pathological liar. Each of us clones represents one aspect of your personality. He's a coward. He's an egomaniac. He's a suck-up. He's a liar.
I am not! So, which part of me did you come from?
Don't ask.
Wow. I think that's all I can say is wow at this point.
Yeah, that was a fun interview.
That was very fun talking to him. That was pretty awesome.
You know, 10 years from now, you know, when Tom Kenny is the actual Tom Kenny of the 2000s as opposed to being the Frank Welker of the 90s. we can look back on this and say, hey, we talked to that guy.
Yep.
You know, it's going to be scary. 10 years from now, when SpongeBob is pushing its 21st, 22nd season, and they're saying, you know, didn't that show called The Simpsons run about this long?
Oh, God. Don't go there. Don't even go there. That's all of the discussion. So, yes. Thank you so much to Tom Kenny for taking the time to talk with us here on the Transformation Animation Podcast, Tooncast Beyond crossover interview. For our Transformation Animation Podcast, we will be starting season 3 soon. And for Tooncast Beyond, actually very funny, episode 1 of Tooncast Beyond season 1 will start with, funny enough, the Superhero Squad.
Awesome.
Perfect timing for this.
I've seen the pilot, and lo, a pilot shall come. I've seen it about 5 million times.
Yes. So that's it for us. We will see you next time. I am TFG1 Mike, and you are?
Pecan Court Michael.
Goodbye, everybody.
See ya.